It's always good to come back to a place where you've invested part of your life, and this is a place that is very near and dear to my heart. And as many have said before, this morning as I've met you, the first words that come out of your mouth seems to be, "You still losing weight," you know, and so, yeah, I'll get this part out of the way. I've now lost 95 pounds. So thank you. It's been consistent over 3 years. I kind of plateaued or stopped losing weight this summer. But it's been a 3-year journey to get back into health. And I would encourage anybody to do it that wants to do the hardest thing they've ever done in their life. It's really been. My wife said, "Don't tell people that." She said, "Don't tell people that." It has been. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. And don't want to lead people on thinking it's easy. It's not. So, but back to good health and enjoying life. I feel younger than I've ever felt, which gives me, my staff doesn't necessarily like it at the convention because I keep coming up with more and more ideas. And so last year we started 302 churches across the state of Texas, and we keep coming up with more and more ideas to reach people for Jesus. This last year, give you some stories of where life has been taking me the last couple of years. This last year, when I went to Sturgis, I make my annual trip every year to go to Sturgis to share Christ with people. This last year, I went and I was to meet some people that I had been building relationship with for the last 3 years. But I had to stop in Lubbock and preach at a church in Lubbock, so I was getting there 2 days later than they were there. And I get there, and just to tell you how things kind of work for the good for those who love the Lord, I get there, and they have been 2 days in rain and mud and were cold. And so as soon as I get there, sun's shining, everything is working, and but they want to leave. They're tired, cold, muddy. And they said, "We're packing up, we're going to Colorado." Well, I just came through Colorado. I'm not going back the same way I just came. I've ridden 1,280 miles in one day to get here. I'm not getting back on my bike tomorrow and riding anywhere else. But they were telling me this at breakfast. And there was another bike group, another bunch of old men like us who were sitting next to him, and they left, and he said, "You got some really cruddy friends who would, you'd drive all the way up here to meet them and they would leave you like that." I said, no, it's okay. And he said, "Well, why don't you ride with us? There's four of us together. Why don't you ride with us?" And I said, "Well, I really appreciate that. Thank you." And well, these four guys didn't know who Jesus was. And they didn't know that I was the preacher. So they had just invited a wolf into the camp, I guess you'd say. You have no idea what they were inviting into. And so we rode that day, and that night it was pitch dark. It was still kind of overcast. It was cold and pitch dark. You couldn't see the hand in front of your face. And I ask him this one question. God always gives me some clarity when I'm there of what question to ask. And I'm going to ask you this same question. I asked them this one question. When you go to bed at night, and we're sleeping in tents and on the ground, and you can't see your hand in front of your face. I said, I just like laying there and thinking and evaluating my life and saying, do I like who I am and what I've become? Do I like where I'm going in my life? Am I satisfied with my relationships with my family, my children, and my now son-in-law? And am I happy with my relationship with my wife? Am I satisfied? Do I feel comfortable in that? And so I challenge you guys to do that. The next morning, we're having breakfast, and one of them comes up and says, "I ought to cut your throat." I said, "Why? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to." He said, "I struggled all night. I don't like my life. I don't like my wife. I don't like my children. They hate me. I don't like my job. The only thing I really like is getting away and being out here. And I don't like my life. And I said, well, brother, you don't have to stay there. And he said, what choice I have? You say, I should, take my own life. No. You don't have to stay there. It's what you've poured your life into. You pour your life into yourself, you're going to be pretty much, I would be that same way too. But if you pour your life, and I had a cup of coffee that morning, and I said, if you pour your life into Jesus, just like this cup of coffee, even though it's black on the inside, when I hold it up, God's chosen to judge the cup and say, because of who you poured your life into, it's good. Because Jesus holds your life, it's good. And then Jesus will take that cup and he'll take it and place it wherever he wants to place it. And then your life will be good. And so Jesus carries your life from here to there to yonder. But Jesus controls because it's his cup. And God uses you because he's, and I'm just using a white styrofoam cup. And he goes, how do I do that? I said, well, it's through faith and believing and forgiveness and asking God with all your heart to forgive you of all the stuff. He said, but I've done some bad stuff. It doesn't matter how bad it is. Doesn't matter. I gave a little bit more graphic. I'm not going to share it. I'll share it with you personally, but a little bit more graphic illustration of how much sin is too much sin. Just the hint of sin for God is enough. So we're all fall short. And he goes, well, how do I pray? Talk to God with your heart. And he prayed, and awkwardly, and I just led him through the prayer of salvation, and he accepted Christ. And he says, now what? Well, now you live by faith. You accepted Jesus by faith. And now you live by faith. He goes, that sounds difficult. I said, well, I'm still trying to work on that. I'm still living by faith. But basically think of taking that cup and letting God control where the cup goes. So you don't change who you are, but you let God control where you go, what you do, how you behave. It's now in God's hands because you've poured yourself, you've poured your life into Jesus, and Jesus now controls that. Well, 6 hours later. Now I'm paid to be good. You guys are good for nothing. And so I have gone through all the education. I've learned all this. I mean, I can take you down evangelistically in about 13 different ways. When, well, now, I found it, faith, belief. I mean, I got them all down. 6 hours later, he brought two more. He had led two more people in 6 hours. I'm going, wait a minute, you don't have the education for this? No. He had the life. They said, what happened to you? And he was just explaining to them what happened to him. And they said, well, I want some of that. And so he brings them to me at lunch or dinner that night. It was actually dinner that night. He brings them to me at dinner that night and says, I think I screwed it up. Not everything washes out in the first few moments of being a Christian. He said, I think I screwed it up. And I said, well, what? And he, I was thinking he had committed some horrible sin, killed somebody or something like that, right after accepting Jesus, I took somebody out. I think I messed up. No, he said, I was telling them what happened to me, and I told them they just had to talk to Jesus and just trust him, and it's all faith. And I just talked to them that way, and they wanted to except Jesus. And I said, yeah. And so I tried to remember the prayer, but I couldn't remember it exactly how we were, what all we were supposed to cover. So I think I messed it up. But they want to give their life to Jesus too. And so I said, well, do you guys with all your heart believe that Jesus is coming to your life? And said, yeah. Did you pray asking him to forgive your sin? They said, yeah. I said, well, you didn't mess anything up, brother. It's good. I mean, you may get there awkward, but you got there. Doesn't matter how you get to Dallas, whether on a motorcycle or in a Cadillac, you got there. So you got there, so don't worry about that. But we'll pray again. So we prayed again, and so two more. So I'm going, this is kind of not fair. I spend all year getting ready for this, praying, preparing, you know, asking God to show up in my life, and 6 hours, really? You reap double harvest of what I can do after a whole year of preparing? You know, I'm sitting there going, okay, this is because it's a God thing. It's life on life. By faith, these men accepted Christ. These 50 plus, didn't ask them exactly how, I know they were at least my age. So these 50 plus year old men, among them, somewhere around 8 wives, 9 wives among the 3 of them, you know, serial, not all at the same time, but you know, I mean, it, you know, so busted relationship after busted relationship, kids not liking them. Now they're new men, new creatures, new in Jesus. And just praying for them that they're going to have an opportunity. And so we set, this is the kind of thing. So typical man fashion, we don't want to be all in each other's business all the time. Typical man fashion, we're supposed to meet back at Sturgis next year, and they're supposed to report, you know, back. I'm fully expecting them to come with the big CMA patches on the back and the whole thing. But typical man fashion, you know, you don't get too far in somebody's business. You just kind of knuckle bump and move on. And so, but anyway, these guys experience something new by faith. That's the journey that we're all on. It's the faith journey. If you have your Bibles with you this morning, that's where we're going to go in the sermon. That was all just kind of the pre-sermon. I'm so glad that you still have a clock at the back, you know, because you know me. And matter of fact, you may not have had a clock for a while and you decide, no, Paul's coming, so we're going to put the clock back at the back. And I hope it's right, because I'll go. If it's late, you just have to, you know, deal with it. So Hebrews 11, actually all of Hebrews 11 is really the text for this. And I'm not going to make you suffer through me reading all of Hebrews 11, but there are some key passages, but there is this key theme through all of Hebrews 11. And it's by faith, but really to understand Hebrews 11, go the next chapter to Hebrews 12, and we're going to start with typical my fashion. We're going to start at the end and move back to the beginning. Because I think when you get to verse 12 and he's talking about, he starts with a therefore in chapter 12, always makes me drive back to what did it say in 11 if he's already hitting a therefore at the verse 1 in chapter 12. So here's the first two verses of chapter 12, Hebrews 12, 1 and 2. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and the perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. So we're going to start at the end of that and move back over to 11, because he's saying, therefore, since we have this great cloud of witnesses, well, who are the great cloud of witnesses that he's referring to? He's referring to how God has moved throughout history. Here the Hebrews writer is going back and saying, yes, let's refer back to all the things of how God has moved. And you know, that's important to me at 53 to go back through and see, how has God moved? He moved when I was 10 and accepted me when I was the 10-year-old who couldn't read and said, I love you and give you a purpose. And then he moved whenever I got onto the special program to learn to read, the dyslexia program. And he showed up when I was 16 and called me to the ministry and when my dad said, no, you may graduate high school, be a miracle, don't tempt God. But yet he called me and showed up. He showed up again when I was able to play football and get into college, in an era when it was more important that you played football than you scored well on your ACT. Now, that was fortunate that I was in that window time frame, because if I had been later than that, I'd still never gotten into college. So God showed up and allowed me to get into college. He showed up again to get me through college by having the administrator when I went to Mary Hardin Baylor, when I transferred to Mary Hardin Baylor, and had the administrator who tutored me. He brought me into Mary Hardin Baylor so I could finish my education, because God had called me into the ministry, and I couldn't get there without this education because of the time frame again we were in. I had to have a seminary education, and he said, well, but you don't meet our criteria, but I'll bring you in an academic probation, but you have to keep every afternoon free because an administrator tutored me so that I could get off academic probation. God showed up. That wasn't a tutor. That wasn't the goodness of a man. That was God showing up in a man. It was God showing up again. It was God showing up when my last year at Mary Hardin Baylor, I was a straight A student. It was God showing up again when I went to India. It was God showing up again when I was arrested in India for evangelism. It was God showing up again when I was released in India to leave 3 days later and was ejected. It was God showing up again whenever I went to Eastern Europe and started house churches. It was God showing up again whenever I came from Eastern Europe and came back to the United States and went to University of Colorado in Boulder. It was God showing up again when he gave me Susan, my wife. It was God showing up again when we were told that we weren't able to have a child, but yet then 6 weeks later, because prayer, he showed up again. By faith, I could be using the word faith. By faith, he showed up, gave us a child, our first. It was again when God showed up and gave us our second child, and we were told that the child had died in the womb. And then we called our prayer group, and they started praying, and God showed up again. And they found the heartbeat before they did the DNC. It was God showed up again when I went to Lubbock, Texas, and was pushed by some people to do some unethical behavior and receiving some money that was out of time and out of date. It was wanting to receive a large check after the first of the year, but post-dated, and I said no and put the pressure on me to leave. But God showed up, and I ended up bumping up and moved to Golden Triangle as their director of missions. It was God showed up again when, as the director of missions there, the association grew, and it went from 80 churches to 115 churches in that association. More missions dollars ever given ever in that association during that period of time. It was God showed up again when he brought me on as a growth consultant at the convention. It was God showed up again when the train wreck of church starting happened and the wheels fell off, and God called me to that. And God showed up again, and we've started more churches than we've ever started. 95% of the churches that we start succeed. God shows up again. So my life, I can go through, and you could go through, and if we had the time, we could go through each one of you who are Christ followers, and you could see the path by faith, by faith, by faith. God showed up, God showed up, God showed up. Now we get here to this, and he's pointing by faith. Let's look through history of how God has showed up. Go back to 11:1. By faith, now being sure. Now faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. By faith, God shows up. You don't have any reason to say, this is saying, well, you don't have any reason to say that he should, but he does. The only thing that you know that he should is because he has. And so it's because of this long history of God showing up in your life, God showing up in others' lives, God showing up in history, that you know that God can show up now. Hold on, hold on, hold on. If you're struggling with something, hold on and wait and pray for God to show up. Let's look at this by faith. Verse 3, by faith we understand that the universe was formed at God's command. That means everything that was, by faith, we understand that God spoke and out of nothing, something, all of creation. By faith, Abel offered to God a better sacrifice. By faith, he was commended for the righteousness. And then you keep going down. Just look at all the verse 4, by faith. Verse 5, by faith, Enoch. Verse 6. Is a key passage, but verse 6, and without faith it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. It is by faith that you come to know Jesus. It is by faith that he sustains you. Look at verse 7, by faith Noah. Remember, Noah built the ark. It never rained before, but yet Noah built an ark by faith, knowing that God was going to provide a way for him to survive the coming flood. Verse 8, by faith, Abraham. Verse 9, by faith, he made his home in a promised land. Verse 11, by faith, Abraham, even though he was past age, and Sarah herself was barren, able to become a father. Verse 13, we're back to another key. All these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. Talking about, these are Old Testament characters that were living by faith that the Messiah would come. That God would provide a path, a way for them to have a relationship with him. A personal relationship with God would be provided because by faith they were knowing that God was going to provide a way that they would never be able to be good enough or whole enough or smart enough to be able to be in relationship with God. But by faith they knew that God would provide a way. He would provide a coming Messiah. By faith Jesus would die on the cross for them. By faith they knew that the Messiah. So the Old Testament is pointing forward to the cross, as now we are pointing back to the cross. But the Old Testament faith men of God were pointing their lives toward the cross, just as the men of God today have to point their lives toward the cross. Anything else is not sufficient. Keep going and you look in verse 17. You'll see, by faith Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac. Fortunately, Isaac didn't have to die because by faith there was a ram in the bush. Verse 20, by faith Isaac blessed Jacob. 21, by faith Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of his sons. Verse 22, by faith Joseph. Verse 23, by faith Moses. Verse 24, by faith Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be the son of Pharaoh's daughter, led the people out of Egypt. By faith, in verse 28, by faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of the blood of so that the destroyer of the firstborn would not touch the firstborn of Israel. So they put the blood on the post by faith, trusting God to pass over them, called the Passover. Verse 29, by faith the people passed through the Red Sea. Remember, the waters parted and the people passed through. Verse 30, by faith, the walls of Jericho fell. You remember the story of Jericho? What did they do? marched and sang, marched around. They were being heckled and made fun of. You got to be kidding me. The last day, marched around it 7 times, blow the horns and the walls come down. That was all by faith. They were doing what God had told them to do when he told them to do it, and trusting him to take action by faith. Verse 31, by faith the prostitute. Man, this is amazing. By faith the prostitute Rahab, because she had welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were destroyed, who were disobedient. Verse 32. And what more shall I say? This is exciting to me. And then he just adds on the rest. He's gone through this whole by faith, and he could just keep going. And he says, and what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell you about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Japheth, David, Samuel, and all the prophets who through their faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, who quenched the fury of the fire, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned into strength. Now this is key, guys. Whose weakness was turned into strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign enemies. Whose weakness became strength. That's me. Whose weakness became strength. I'm still the 10-year-old boy, even though I'm 53. I'm still the kid who couldn't read. It's by faith that God shows up. Director of church starting for the convention? Really? The 10-year-old who said, I don't have anything to give to Jesus? The 10-year-old who couldn't read? The 10-year-old who was the least likely to succeed? The 10-year-old who went to the school for the mentally challenged for 6 weeks? Really? That's a God thing. That's a God thing when God shows up. So now, what are your challenges? Is really the question. What are your challenges? What are the things that can only be accomplished in your life by faith? Is it that child who just is stubborn and just won't give their life to Jesus regardless? By faith, pray for them. Love them. Care for them. Trust that they will have more time on this earth so that they can have an opportunity to accept Jesus. These men who are in their 50s that I shared with, I guarantee you there is someone who's been praying for each one of those men. And it took a weird thing like a preacher in Sturgis to be coming 2 days late, to wear out the group he was going to meet, the rain and mud. Do you think all that just happened? No, God ordained a moment in time, but I could have missed it had I been depressed and down and not seeking the next opportunity for God to show up. But God used me to lead one who then led two more. And I guarantee you there's been grandmas praying for these men and wives praying for these men and people praying for these men and maybe churches praying for these men, because by faith, God did what was impossible. People in 50s don't accept Jesus. People in their 60s don't accept Jesus. They've lived a whole life away from Jesus. Why would they pick now? By faith. Someone has been praying, Lord, don't give up on them. Don't give up on them. Don't give up on them. By faith, these things have happened. That's the way it is. So today I want to tell you, hold on. Hold on to what you know to be true. Hold on to what God has called you to. Hold on to pray for that lost son or daughter, that lost friend, that lost neighbor. Continue to pray for them. It may not be you who gets to reap that harvest. It may be some stranger in some foreign land, and you go, really? I've been praying all this time and I don't get that little blessing? No. By faith, you trust that God will show up and do what he needs to do. Don't give up on those people. Don't give up on those loved ones, those neighbors, those people you care about. Don't give up on that. By faith. Now, let me speak to you. By faith, hang on in your own personal life. Hang on for God to show up. I was at a fundraiser. My wife did a garden at the Biblical Arts Museum. She designed it, and now they're trying to raise money to get it. I've never been in such high cotton in all my life as I was last night. I mean, Jerry Jones and his wife and all these people that everybody knew. The Hunts were there. And I sat and chatted with the Hunts for 15 minutes and didn't know they were the Hunts. So they just said, he's just such a down-to-earth guy. I'd have been scared to death if I had known. See, God showed up and didn't let me know this was the Hunt family. You know, richest people in this part of Texas. Really? I mean, I didn't know that. So, you know, they say, you're just so comfortable around rich people. I have no idea who they are. I mean, you know, there was some famous country and western band at a private party, a country and western artist at a private party. I just chatted with him. I didn't know who he was either. I don't listen. So you're just so comfortable around. It's just good to see normal people. I don't know who you are. So you're just like Bubba and the waiter and the other people who are serving us. I mean, I don't know who you are either. And so, but God shows up. And so somebody was asking me, he said, well, what do you think about Judas? It doesn't take them long to find out, okay, I got the preacher here, so then I get all the goofball questions. Well, what do you think about Judas? I said, what about Judas? And they said, well, you know, you wouldn't have had the cross if Judas hadn't betrayed. I said, no, you're missing the whole point. It's not about Judas. Would have had the cross. The sad part about Judas is he needed to hold on and not take his own life. He needed to hold on because the other side of what you saw, Jesus' response was Jesus' response to Peter. Jesus' response to Peter, who Peter denied Jesus three times, his response to Peter was forgiveness. The sad part about Judas is Judas didn't wait for Jesus to show up. That's the part that breaks my heart about Judas. Should have waited. Waited. Hang out. Yes, you've messed up. You've sinned before God. You've done the worst thing that you could do. Hold on for after the resurrection. Hold on. So regardless of where you are in your life, my counsel to you is hold on and pray. And ask God to forgive you and ask him to forgive you and ask him to place you back into relationship with him, and the rest doesn't matter. Ask him to come back in and give you purpose and give you focus and give you direction. Hold on. Hold on until you get to spend that time with Jesus. Hold on. Don't make rash decisions. Hold on. For the sin is to give up. The worst is to give up, to give in. Hold on and trust Jesus. By faith, let these things work out. By faith, the most horrible thing that can happen can become sweet. I don't know how many times I've prayed for God to remove dyslexia from my life. And yet, as I get older, I find that it's my greatest connector with young people who are struggling, who feel stupid. So, Jesus, are you telling me you gave me this and let this ferment in my life for 50 years so that I can turn around and give hope to someone else? I don't like that. I don't like that. That's not what I signed up for. I signed up for healthy, wealthy, and prosperous, but I don't get that. What? No, I get the name it, claim it. I get the name and claim it. I get to name my sins and claim forgiveness and move on. I don't get the comfortable stuff. No, I get to name my sin and claim forgiveness and move on. And then I get to turn around and say, I've been forgiven of much, and I love much. You can be forgiven of much, and you can love much. I get to say, there's hope, regardless of how deep and dark it gets. There's hope that God will show up by faith and turn ugly into beautiful. One last little story, because I know it's late. Turning ugly into beautiful. I'm not sure if I told you the blind date that my mother sent me on when I was a teenager. The junior in high school. She sent me on a blind date with a friend from church. You know, his daughter was needing to go to the Cotton Palace Ball. It was like the debutante thing. And she said, oh, I know my son's not dating anybody. He'd be glad to take your daughter to. She was ugly and had a weight problem and had hair problem issues. I think she kind of grew hair. But anyway, she was not an attractive young lady. And I said, Mom, you're killing me here. I'm a junior in high school. I drive a CUDA. I'm cool guy. Come on, I drive a CUDA. You got to be kidding me. No, do this for me. And so then her grandfather, this was the granddaughter. Her grandfather comes to me and I said, well, you know, Mr. Graves, I don't think I can because, you know, I don't have appropriate vehicle to go to the debutante ball. And he goes, I'll have my driver pick you up. Okay, well, I don't really have, I'm just a you know, junior in high school and football player, and I don't really have the clothes. I'll have my tailor make you a suit, you know, make you a tux. Okay, you know, I said, well, you know, I really won't be able to go get anything to eat afterward. I know that's all part of it. No, you can just go to the club and sign my name. Thanks, Mom. You know, it was the thing. Thanks, Mom. Went. She's a lovely, lovely young woman. Went. Had a great time. You know, I thought I would survive until I showed up at high school the next week and everybody was, you know, poking fun and everything at me. And I thought I was going to die. Well, then I saw her 10 years later after she had graduated from college. She'd had her, well, because she had kind of her jaw, her bottom jaw was further out than her top jaw. And so she had the underbite, whatever it was. Anyway, and she had kind of a flat nose and she had kind of heavy eyebrows. And well, she had had a lot of surgery done, a lot of work done. She was a gorgeous woman 10 years later. She, you know, when they wired her jaw shut, she lost a lot of weight and got in shape. And she was a gorgeous woman. You never know what you're going to get. Gorgeous. And had a gorgeous husband. And I was thinking of telling, pulling him off to the side, do you know what your kids are going to, you know, okay, no. But God showed up. And what was a horrible experience at the time for me turned into be a sweet experience. Turned into be a good experience for her and her life. And everything worked out and we became good friends. Years later, God showed up. So young people, if your mother does that to you, just hang on. Hang on, it's okay. You know, if you're that person, hang on. God will show up in your life. If whatever person you relate to in that, hang on. Hang on. God's not finished with you. Hang on. It's okay. We're in this together. That's why we're the family of God. That's why we're a family here at church. We're here for each other. We're just one hanging on for now and giving the testimony of how God showed up in the past. for the next one, for the next one, for the next one. Now we're into the time of invitation. Maybe you're just hanging on. And you just need to give it over to God. I want to encourage you to do that. Give it over to God. Doesn't matter where you're at. Give it over to God. Let Jesus just come in and pour your life back into his cup. Pour it and let him take that cup wherever he wants. Please, he's not a leaky cup. He'll hold you. He'll keep you. He'll sustain you. Pour your life into Jesus. He won't let you down. It may not be comfortable sometimes, but it'll be good for you. May not be the most comfortable thing that you do, but it'll be good for you. Let him take control. You can do that at this time of invitation. Maybe you're looking for a church home. I'm tied to this church, and I can think of no better church for you to join than this church. If you're looking for a church home, this is a Bible-believing, Jesus-centered church. I know these people. You can find no better people anywhere. So just, you know, get off the center stripe and jump on in. Come on in. This is family. Just jump on in and join this church. But maybe you never poured your life in to Jesus, that he can sustain you and hold you. I want to give you that opportunity right now as well. So stand with me. I'm going to ask you to come and sing. What's the hymn of invitation? Just as I am. Perfect. Very, very good. See, that's God showed up again. Just as I am is exactly the way that you come. You come just as you are. So maybe you need to give your life to Jesus. Maybe you just need the encouragement of saying, I just need to hold on. Maybe you just need to pray. Whatever it is that you need, maybe you need to join this church. I want to receive you to do any of those things. So let's go to him in prayer and then we'll sing. Father, thank you for this opportunity to be here. Thank you for these men and women, boys and girls, and just ask that you would show up in our lives in very real and dynamic ways. Encourage us by faith and let us see your hand move in not only our lives, but the lives around us. In Jesus' name, amen.